Welcome back, everyone. This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on most streaming platforms. Just search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. You can also check us out on our social media pages such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest episodes and up-to-date Chiefs news. All right, so 2 days ago on Monday Night Football, obviously the Raiders are in town against Chiefs, heck of a game, right? I mean, it's actually the first game I think both you and me have been at this year, so it's kind of good to get both of our feedbacks of being there. But what were your thoughts, I guess you would say, from the game, first thoughts and, you know, how the crowd was and everything?
So, I mean, I think what stands out the most is from an energy perspective, right? So the crowd was insane after that roughing the passer. I think between that and the AFC Championship game versus the Titans when we were booing, or maybe it was like just regular, you know, third down noise.
Right.
The two loudest games I've ever been at. But it was intense. Like, I mean, there's clips out there about, you know, the refs' voice cracking and stuff like that when trying to make calls and picking up flags. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think it was necessarily the crowd noise. I mean, I don't think refs sit there and think, oh, they're booing me, I'm going to not call things.
Right.
But yeah, it was just an intense atmosphere. And you could tell, I mean, that drive, right? They got to delay a game. I think they got like two penalties in a row, the Raiders did. Mm-hmm. One of them was delay a game. I mean, and like, it's deafening. If you've ever done the stadium tour, and then you get to go on the field and yell with your group of like 15 people. And it's super cool how it sounds with 15 people. So imagine almost 80,000 folks yelling what it sounds like. I couldn't even imagine trying to call a play, get an organized stuff like that, snap the ball. So for me, that was the biggest thing from a play perspective. It was a really good game, right? The reps were probably a little too involved. But again, it's just Patrick has that Michael Jordan, that Kobe Bryant in him, when it comes to being clutch and making things happen so that his team is in a position to win a game. And it happened again, right? Being down 17, you come back and you still win the game. Obviously, at the end of the game, that's pretty funny how the Raiders ran into each other.
Right.
But yeah, like I said, for me, it's really about the atmosphere that the crowd created. And then, you know, Patrick, once again, just brilliant in his evolution as a quarterback.
All right. I mean, even down 17-0, I mean, like you said, we've been to games, we've seen games recently with, you know, as far as when Mahomes has been on the team, and it's been like, it's nothing. Like, you think to yourself, like, I've seen this so many times, like, and it's also like the Raiders too as well, even though you're not saying it's any particular team, but it's like, it's 17-0, like, it's still early. If it's like 17-0, you know, fourth quarter, you know, maybe you might get a little bit worried, but I mean, even that, I mean, I guess it all depends on how much time is left in the game, but 17-0 and it's like first quarter, you know, in the first quarter, second quarter, you're still thinking like, this is still a ball game, the way Mahomes has played and come back at any time. And it kind of, I mean, it kind of is how it always is going like that on certain games that he ends up playing, you know, well in, obviously when he picks up after, you know, starting off that slow start. But, what you know, obviously we'll get into, you know, more of discussion, you know, here from the game here in a little bit, but I'll go ahead and get you with the stats of the game and start off.
All right. So obviously we'll start off with the teams. Chiefs 30, Raiders 29. That brings the Chiefs to 4-1, drops the Raiders to 1-4. From a, well, let's go over the team stats really quick, right? So overall yards, the Raiders were at 378 while the Chiefs were at 368. Chiefs had 265 in the air while the Raiders had 223. And on the ground, 155 with the touchdown for the Raiders and 103 for the Chiefs. No turnovers in this game, which it seems like, you know, just remembering that game, it's like there had to have been one, but right, no turnovers. Right. Definitely a few sacks. And then, so let's get into the specifics, right, of the top dogs for each team. So Derek Carr was 19 for 30, 241 yards, two touchdowns. He was sacked twice, and his quarterback rating was 110.6. Josh Jacobs had a really good day on the ground, right? 21 attempts, 154 yards, and a touchdown. Had a few catches and some yards there. And then we all know who led the way from a receiving perspective for the Raiders. Their all-star wide receiver, or all-pro wide receiver, I guess all-star isn't something you say in football. Davante Adams had 3 catches for 124 yards, 2 touchdowns. I think we remember the 2 bombs, especially that one early on in the game. So that's those are the Raiders' numbers on offense. And then just so we stay on par with the teams, Max Crosby led the way from a sacks percentage or sacks count. He had 2. Denzel Perryman had 1 for the Raiders. And then heading into the Chiefs, of course, Patrick Mahomes is our leading passer. I think we all know how many touchdowns he had. But he was 29 of 43 for 292 yards, 4 touchdowns. He was sacked 3 times, which I just mentioned, right, 2 for Crosby, 1 for Perryman. Had a few yards rushing as well. And then on the ground, McKinnon led the way with 53 yards and 8 attempts. Clyde had 9 attempts for 15 yards, had some catches as well. In the air, so yardage was led by someone else, not named Travis Kelce, which MVS led the way with 6 for 90, and then McCall had 4 for 73. Juju had a pretty below average day for 3 catches, 33 yards. And then, of course, I think everyone remembers it, right? Travis Kelce had 7 receptions, 25 yards, and on 4 of those receptions, he scored a touchdown.
Hi, I'm Al Bundy. There's a time I scored 4 touchdowns in 1 game on this field. 4 touchdowns in 1 game.
Do I know you, man?
Ever hear of Al Bundy? 4 touchdowns in 1 game? I presume you're referring to my 4 touchdowns in 1 game? Bundy! B-U-N-D-Y, Al Bundy! 4 touchdowns. And I'm not talking the whole year. 1 game.
So there we go. We got a little clip from Travis Kelce in the future, right? As opposed to saying B-U-N-D-Y, K-E-L-C-E, right? Either like when he's in the 60s or something, like Al Bundy, like good old Al Bundy. And then defensively for the Chiefs, let me go down here to the sacks, right? So we had 2 sacks, 1 by Darius Harris, and then Karlaftis and Clark split one. From a tackles perspective, Darius Harris led the way once again with Nick Bolton right behind him. Darius Harris led the way and Nick Bolton was up there again with 9 tackles. So no interceptions, anything like that, right? But overall, fun historic numbers game for number 87. And that's why we dropped that little gem on you guys. Of Al Bundy talking about a sport touchdown. So hopefully Travis Kelce can, say those to his kids or grandkids or maybe Jason's kids, right, in the future.
Right, yeah. No, and it's kind of crazy because obviously now, you know, with Kelce had the 4 touchdowns and also Mahomes had obviously the 4 touchdowns as well, they both lead the league in those stat categories, right? So, like, as far as how many passes have been touchdown passes in the league right now, Mahomes leads that. How many receiving touchdowns? Kelce leads that. So, kind of ironic that they connected with each other on those 4 touchdowns, even though, like you said, you'd mentioned, you know, odd stat, right? 7 catches, 25 yards, 4 touchdowns. It's like he didn't do anything until they got down and score, but that's when it matters, right? So, I know a lot of fantasy owners didn't complain because they got 4 touchdowns out of him, especially if you're in like a, you know, PPR league. You got 7 catches as well, so you added extra to there. So, they probably didn't care so much about the yards, it was the touchdown. So definitely a lot of fantasy owners probably got their win maybe just off that this weekend. So
For sure. Like for me, I mean, I had Davante Adams, so was hoping for him to do well, but not well enough to where they beat the Chiefs. But yeah, he only had 3 catches, right? And on those 3 catches, he had a crap ton of yards and 2 right. touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for fantasy, Kelce and Adams definitely delivered.
Yeah, it was like a total opposite. Like, I mean, like one had the yards, right? And then one had just the touchdowns, basically. So, yeah, definitely if you had one or both, it probably definitely helped you or, secured that win for you.
Yeah, check it out. So, Davante Adams had 3 catches, 124, right? So, you split that up. He basically had like 40 point something, 40.8, right? If I'm not mistaken, that would be his exact count. per reception. That's insane. Like Travis only had 25 receiving yards on seven catches, so his is like 3 point something. But that's yeah, and then his touchdown, like his in football, right? Just like in other sports, they do a it's like an expected touchdown score, basically evaluating if you should have scored on these kind of plays. I mean, his numbers are probably through the roof because yeah, that's insane.
Oh yeah, definitely insane. So some after the game kind of news, as far as on injury related news, which we'll talk obviously more about it later in the week. But first off, defensive tackle, what is his first name now? I can't remember now. It's Wharton. I'm trying to remember his first name.
Trishon.
yes, Trishon Wharton. Good gosh, I couldn't remember it. Sean Wharton, defensive tackle. He injured his knee on a play. I can't remember exactly when it was, but he actually tore his ACL. So he's actually out for the season. So definitely somebody will have to step up there in the defensive line category. Also, Brian Cook, the rookie safety, left with concussion. I believe Rashad Fitton. I'm not sure if he ended up leaving the game, but I think he did leave for a little bit of it with a hamstring injury. So a little bit, and then I think also Chris LeMond on special teams also left the game with the injury as well. So a couple of injuries there on the defensive side. I don't know if you even noticed Frank Clark didn't play in the second half. He was sick. So I obviously he made like a he had a sack that you had mentioned, and also he had a really good play for a tackle for a loss as well. Those are both, I think, in the first quarter, if not one early in the second quarter. But he was sick, so he didn't play at all. So I don't know if you noticed, like down the stretch there in the last few drives, it was a lot of rookies in there. It was a lot of young guys in there playing some quality minutes for some of these guys that were hurt. But yeah, those are some of the injuries that had happened. The result from the game, not including maybe another injury. From a non-football player, but you don't know if it's an actual injury or not. But
caused by a football player, though.
Yeah, caused by a football player, right? So,
man, ain't nothing wrong with that, man. He's trying to get a paycheck.
Yeah, right. So, but yeah, so let's see. What the Chiefs do. I think they, they've already brought up one of their guys from the practice squad for defensive tackle, in Taylor Stallworth, who used to play with the Colts, I believe. And then they've, I think they've made some. Several moves as far as on practice squad too as well. So more to come and see what they do, see what happens with that. Obviously more updated news on some of the other injuries for the game coming up against Buffalo next week. One of the bigger ones is OJ McDuffie, who returned to practice. Or no, I say OJ McDuffie again. Trent McDuffie. I need to get this out of my head. OJ McDuffie thing. No, Trent McDuffie, the rookie cornerback, practiced today. So it's a good sign. Obviously he's not on the injury report because he's still on the injury list, so they don't have to put him down on that report yet. So it's a good sign. I guess Andy said he's been practicing a lot and also running full strength at these drills that he's been doing too as well. So good sign. Hopefully he'll end up playing Buffalo. And I think Harrison Butker was limited today as well in practice, so hopefully he ends up playing against Buffalo. But like I said, more to come with those later this week when we end up doing our preview for that Buffalo game. So now, okay, on to, more for the Raiders game here. Obviously, you had mentioned, said all the stats categories from the game, and Chiefs ended up winning 30-29. It's funny because we did our score predictions, right? And you were the one that was like, yeah, let's make it a little bit more tighter this time. I think you said like 27-24, something like that. So you're pretty close on that. I know it's like 38-21. So,
but you know what's crazy is I was thinking about it as it was happening. I was like, dude, this game is about to literally end up. It was 20. What was it when the score was 17-20? I was like, Chiefs score a touchdown. It's 24-20. No, that was I don't know, but somehow
it was 20. It was 24-20 at one point. Sorry, 23-20 because that's when. We went for the two-pointer,
yeah,
and we didn't get it, yeah,
because it was seven either way, right? So
something like that, yeah.
Because it would have made it 30. I was like, man, I'm gonna be spot on. If not, I'll be close. But in all honesty, I mean, I can't take too much credit for getting the score kind of close.
Right.
Because I thought it was going to be a blowout. I just said I'm going to go with Tim really tight because every time I do, it says the opposite. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, I mean, it was a really close game.
Yeah, and so, you know, some of the highlights from the game, I mean, obviously, you know, the Raiders got off to a quick start, and obviously they were up 17-0. The Chiefs' first couple of drives, it was basically a punt. The next drive, we had a missed field goal from Matthew Wright, which I believe it was not – it was a 41-yarder, right? And so it was like, it was, you know, definitely a doable kick for most kickers in the league. There was a little bit of, obviously, some wind Monday night, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it was that much wind, right? But yeah, so obviously then we punted on our third drive. And then finally, really on our fourth drive, it was actually Jarrett McKinnon got us going with that 30-yard run where he just, man, he did not give up on that play. I thought he was down and he just kept running. I think you probably had a better view of that because I think he was running towards the end zone that you're sitting at.
Yep, he sure was.
So that's kind of what got that drive going. And obviously that was the first touchdown of Mahomes to Kelce to make it 17-7. Leading into here closer to halftime where obviously it's the famous play. We'll talk about it obviously a little bit here now and then we'll talk about more of it later. Obviously, it's the you know the famous Chris Jones sack on Derek Carr. You know the refs thought he was putting all even in a. Oh, sorry, it was a fumble too. It was a sack fumble. Chris Jones had the ball in his hand. They blew the play dead, but they called roughing the passer on Chris Jones because they thought that he put his weight on Derek Carr, and you know basically you can't do that, right? I guess at least for the way that. You know, they described that hit, but obviously that was a game changer on that drive at that moment. And it was obviously more ridiculous than the call that Tom Brady and the Buccaneers had the day before that. But right then, like I said, what were your kind of thoughts right there running through your mind that, you know, that play happened? You're like, oh, great, it happened to us now.
Well, it's crazy because, I mean, Chris Jones seems to always be in the middle of some unfortunate call, right? The Tom Brady roughing the passer when he supposedly hit him in the helmet, and you see what the Patriots try in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just like, man, what? And then once you see it, like I saw it live because I think it was in the, I think they were facing me, right? Because Carr would have been heading the opposite direction.
That's correct.
And I'm watching, and I'm like, for what? Like, and then as soon as the flag came out, I thought about it, and I was like, you're gonna say he fell on him. Which I'm like, how else is a 300 plus pound man supposed to tackle a 200 some plus pound man? So it was crazy. Like I'm a pretty quiet person when I watch games, you know, in the stadium. Like I'm pretty chill, but I was definitely hyped, and so was the rest of the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just like, and then you know, the more they showed it, the more it made us more mad because obviously you could see like his left hand or his left arm. He was bracing for the impact. So it wasn't like, you know, he didn't even try to let up, right? I mean, he was going down. What was he going to do? I mean, what was he really going to do? He was trying to do the best he could to not, you know, put his full weight on Carr. Just terrible call. And then obviously from there on out, from the rest of the half, you know, it was just the crowd was booing like every play, basically. The Raiders ended up with a field goal on that drive. We had a short 17-second drive that I think obviously I think there was one play we just tossed it to McKinnon on a kind of an out route a little bit like maybe like a 5 yard 10 yard you know right towards the sidelines and they got a I want to say it was a horse collar or a face mask that we ended up getting 15 yards keeping that drive alive and I think we got one other play out of that and Matthew Wright hit a 59 yard field goal which was like, wow, he missed that 41, but he made the 59-yarder and actually is a Chiefs record for longest field goal ever made. I think Harrison Butker and Nick Lowry, I think, had the old record, which was at 58. So now everyone's saying, like, okay, so this part-timer now has the record, so now Butker has to make a 65 or 70-yarder, right, to make it to where it's like an actual, our actual kicker has the record, so... but yeah,
if he'd stopped being a baby about his ankle,
yeah. So obviously it ended up being 20-10 at halftime. And like I said, I mean, down 10 points at halftime and we're getting the ball in the second half. I mean, how are you feeling about the game at that point?
I mean, well, having Mahomes put us through the Houston Texans, right? Anything is possible. But I knew they would come out and make some adjustments, right? And they did. And really at that point, it was like, you know how we talk about in that Texans game, we didn't really panic because it was still early. That's kind of how it felt in this setup. So,
right.
Yeah, I was like, eh, I mean, you can't get carried away. Good thing is we have the ball. So that was a plus.
Yeah, and then, like I said, we came out, scored a touchdown. They punted, scored another touchdown. The whole second half was just offense seemed to be connecting. We're total opposite from the first half. A lot of players, I would say, that stepped up in this game that hasn't in the past was, at least so far this year, definitely Mecole Hardman. He made some nice plays. Definitely, I would say, Marquez Valdez-Scantling played probably better for the most part, too, as well. I think, obviously, he said he led the team in receptions and yards. Obviously, he did have some – I think he still had about a couple of drops, but
Man, some of his catches were moving around and right and left. I was like
– Yeah. Well, I mean, there was one – I remember there was one. It was on third down. Nice catch, but it looked like it almost fell out of his hands. So I was just like, oh, gosh. Yeah, so – but they still made the catches when they did. I think most
still
of them
count, right?
Yeah, in the spots that we needed to happen, like the moments you want them to happen, a lot of it was on third downs. You know, they caught them right and they made the play. So you know, kudos to them having a good game. You know, also I guess McKinnon had a pretty good game overall too as well. Obviously he only had 8 carries. There was one thing that surprised me. I know, obviously, we saw Sky Moore in the game a lot late in the fourth quarter, towards on that final drive. But Pacheco,
they kept going back to that same player, right?
Yeah. So we'll talk about that real quick. So that it was on that final drive, the first down, they went on that swing pass to Sky Moore, then ended up being 2nd and 2, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran, got the first down. The next first down play, they do the same exact play. He gets 8 yards again. And then, so I'm thinking on this play up, this second and 2, right, on this drive, I'm thinking they're not going to do the same play. They're not going to have Clyde Edwards-Helaire run the ball. And they sure did. And he tripped and fell, lost a yard. It was 3rd and 3 at that point. But no, I guess what I was leading into was Pacheco. Saw him, I think, 2 plays in the first half. And one of them was a run he got stuffed. And I think after that, we seen him on kick returns. Other than the last kick return, it was Sky Moore. So, you know, you thought he was going to get some increased snaps after how he ran against Tampa Bay the previous week. I think a lot of it, and I think the more of it that I read and kind of made sense afterwards is because we were down 17-0. They wanted to have the veterans in McKinnon and Clyde Edwards-Helaire take over for those spots as far as any kind of running game or any kind of screens or, you know, passes or whatever. They didn't want to, I guess, kind of throw the rookie in at that point is the only thing I could think of. But what are your kind of thoughts on that part as well as maybe you didn't see him in the game that maybe you wanted to, but just didn't?
No, I mean, I think that the rosters make sense, right? Is you're going to go with your more experienced players. I mean, he did get in a few times, right, for a little bit of a spark. And I think one of them I remember he did well. But, yeah, I mean, that's why you have the experience you have. You know, if a 7th rounder is playing – that much in those situations, you're either a terrible team or you have the luxury of playing somebody because of the score, right? And in this situation, we didn't. So it made sense. I mean, I always like watching him play because he's just fun to watch. But of course, right, that's, you know, being fun to watch versus being effective are 2 different things.
So I guess back to that 3rd and 3 we're talking about, there was that play that Mahomes threw to Hardman, kind of overshot him. I just didn't think that was the right play to call. You needed 3 yards. Like, I mean, you try to throw the ball like 10 or 15 yards, and I just didn't like that play call. What are your thoughts on that too?
Yeah, I mean, and even that, you know, even that playing out, I think that was more on Patrick making a weird throw. And I don't think he was under too much pressure. I think he probably thought Nicole was going to take it up the field a little bit more, and he kind of cut it flat towards the sideline. So right. I think that's just being on different pages. But I agree. Now, obviously, right, you can't just – if you need 3 yards, everyone doesn't just run 3 or 4 yards. You know, you need some deep allocation so that, you know, they occupy higher spaces up the field. But, yeah, I mean, and Mahomes just ended up making something happen, right? But, yeah, it wasn't the play call I probably would have gone to.
No, and then obviously it led to that punt where the Raiders had that final drive. At this point, I mean, you're thinking that, oh, gosh, now our defense has to stop them. I mean, yet have any kind of worries or nervous at that point? I think I know a lot of people are like, oh, yeah. My heart can't take it right now.
Well, I mean, just what Davante Adams did, right? I mean, and even on that last play of the game, we still went cover zero. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. We still went cover zero. We went cover zero. He beat us twice. Actually, I think his second touchdown, I don't know if it was quite on cover zero. I think there was a safety. He was just late.
It was both rookies. It was Watson and it was Cook on that.
And it was Cook. Yeah, so no, safeties. So he was back there. So yeah, anytime you have Davante Adams and you've been cooked like that two times, right. It's like, oh, crap. And they did move the ball, right?
Yeah, they did. They were moving the ball just fine until, like I said, that last play where just they ran it. They had ran into each other, which I think you mentioned also I watched too was Adams got bumped off the line pretty well.
It was a really good bump because it really delayed him. I mean, it delayed him a whole, like, I think 2 seconds. And obviously that messes up the timing, right? Because the way that, well, I guess common sense would tell you, you wouldn't have a slot wide receiver running an out route on top of a fly route. So right. It delayed him so much that they ran right into each other. And those are usually, they're like right off of each other because the intent there is to kind of hopefully get the trailing defensive back covering Davante Adams and kind of run him into that out route that Renfro is running into. So either Renfro's open or the top is open, you know? So
right.
It was a really good press. And that was it, I can't remember, was it Rashad Fenton that pressed him or was it Watson?
I want to say it was Watson.
Go back and look.
Yeah, I want to say
because it was remember Watson. Fenton got cooked on that first one.
Yeah, well, that's why I was wondering because he had the hamstring injury, so that's why I wasn't sure if he was there at the end of the game in there. So
yeah, true.
But yeah, so obviously, after that play, the game was over, and obviously, he had to end up winning 30-29. So I guess overall, obviously, Mahomes and Kelce connected on 4 touchdowns. So I'm going to go ahead and play a clip of what my favorite moment was that was after the game.
I love this dude right here, baby. This is my dog.
We keep fighting, baby.
Oh, that was just great. That was great seeing that. So that I had to play that because I thought that was like my favorite thing that happened, the course of the game, the season. These guys have played with each other. They're just like on sync with each other and just love it. But besides that, you have anything else as far as favorite moments of the game or a favorite moment of the game?
No, I mean, of course, right, obviously all of Travis' touchdowns were nice. I think, you mentioned, we were talking about it beforehand, right? He was pretty tired after those long drives, so we didn't get to see anything crazy from him when he scored a touchdown. But, I mean, it's anytime that you catch 4 touchdowns, whatever position you play is cool. As weird as it sounds, I think my favorite moment was that rough in the passer call because Arrowhead was just rocking. And Arrowhead is always a really cool atmosphere to be in from a sports enthusiast perspective. But it was a whole different thing. And I think it genuinely had an impact on the game. The atmosphere, right? Not the rough in the passer call. Or that.
Yeah, because I had to go back when I got home and I had to watch that whole scenario because I knew it was loud, right? I mean, I knew it was loud there. I wanted to see what it was on TV, and like you could clearly hear like when everyone was saying the BS chant, and then when they were saying the ref sucked or something like that, like you hear like clear as day on TV, like everyone saying that. So it was nuts, but I agree with you. I mean, just that was just crazy, hearing that how loud everything was, and it just jacked up the crowd for the second half, the whole team, right? So so that was definitely good. So as far as on, game balls of the game, I kind of mentioned a little bit ago, and this is where I kind of went with it. It was like I kind of went with the whole wide receiver core. I mean, that's including Travis as well. Like I said, I think they really stepped up on different moments of the game when needed to. Obviously, Kelce, finding his way around the end zone, whether it was their game plan or not, which, I mean, I don't know if anybody had heard or saw the New Heights episode with the Kelce brothers, but I guess that's what the coach, Josh McDaniels, said, that was their game plan, was to stop Kelce. Well, obviously they didn't because he scored 4 touchdowns. But, I think the whole receiving core for me got the game ball for this game.
Yeah, I mean, and for me, just because I don't want to say the same thing, right, I think you got to go with Patrick. He was basically perfect On the day from a throwing the ball perspective, yeah, I mean, I guess the completion to incompletion numbers aren't the greatest, and his, you know, 158.3 wasn't his rating. But anytime you throw four touchdowns, zero interceptions, and obviously you win a game, it's a pretty good game for the quarterback. And I will kind of give maybe like half of a game ball to the offensive line, right? Do you read about how Patrick said, he told the offensive line, I think in the second quarter, guys, we're going to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
On your back, right? So whether you play bad or we play or you play good, you know, we're going to win or lose it because of you. So, and they really stepped up. Max Crosby and Chandler Jones, those two guys are beasts. Like watching them, you know, from my angle, right, I get to watch how the plays develop and the stance. So it's called a wide nine technique, right, where the defensive ends are basically lined up almost like a whole player outside of the tackle. And that's really hard to defend when you're not a fast tackle. So both Orlando Brown Jr. And Andrew Wiley, they ended up doing better than what they did in the first half. And so I think the adjustment was good there. And that ultimately helped us just do a little bit better in regards to moving the ball in the second half, because first half we definitely struggled a bit.
Yeah, because if I had to pick because now I'm moving on to, you know, what kind of like disappointments from the game or any kind of player individually. If I had to say it from the first half alone, I would have probably picked Andrew Wiley, but he was struggling against Crosby that whole first half, definitely first quarter. You know, I think I mentioned to you and the people in our chat that we talk about is like the absence of Trey Smith, because normally he's right next to him. You know, what impact was that against it too as well? You know, little bit to none. I mean, the whole offensive line was getting beat up, right? So it wasn't like it was strictly on him, but he had the most talented guy, at least. I mean, Chandler Jones is good too, no disrespect to him, but the most talented guy that's hungry on that defensive line every game that he seems to play is Max Crosby. So obviously he had struggled, but obviously I'm not going to give it to him because they end up, you know, in the second half, you saw it was a totally different, you know, offensive line that we had seen. And also they were helping, I think they were bumping off a lot on him too as well, on the line of scrimmage in the second half, which kind of helped in making sure he's kind of a little bit at times, you know, a little bit double teamed too as well. So that helped. So, I mean, obviously I'm going with the obvious one here as the kicker. I hate to say it, but, you know, he missed a 41-yard field goal in that first half. He missed another one, which maybe could have bit us as well, but the Raiders had that holding penalty, which is weird. On the a defensive holding penalty on a field goal is very interesting. Because he ended up missing that field goal, but we end up getting a first down off of that and scoring a touchdown.
Did you see the last time that supposedly was called? It was like 7 years ago or something, and it was the same ref on the same team.
Yeah, oh, I didn't know about that. The same exact – that's crazy.
Yeah, the last time that penalty was called was the exact same ref and on the Raiders. I think it was like – might have been even older. It might have been like 2013.
That's interesting because, like I said, those calls are rare. I mean, if you're holding
– very –
very rare.
They call it the hold and shoot, right? Where one defender holds an attacker so that the other defender can shoot in.
Right.
Because of the, you know, like on a kick or on a field goal, right? There are a little bit different rules in regards to what you can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I watched it a few times and I'm like, huh?
Right, right.
And then when someone explained that, I was like, I guess.
Because that was at the time, and then the next drive after that is when we score our last touchdown of the game, and we don't kick the extra point because at that point you're not trusting the kicker, you're just trying to go for it at that point, and you know we're like, okay, well, I mean, Andy Reid's doing it because obviously, yeah, he's not trusting the kicker at this point,
mm-hmm.
And then the Raiders come back and they score a touchdown, they do the same thing, but their way of doing it probably wasn't smart because they had a kicker. They could have just tied the game there and then and there. That's obviously what cost them the game. But back to, you know, Matthew Wright, is those field goals at the end of the game could have cost us the game or, you know, whatever of different scenarios a part of the game could have cost it. So that's why, I, you know, if there's anything, someone that, you know, obviously didn't play up to par of the game, it would be him. I don't know what you have for the game.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's different because I would almost say, so most coaches, right, they script out the first 15 play of the game. Our first half, our adjustments were just bad. But, you know, someone who coaches, sometimes you have to get to the half to completely regroup because regrouping on the fly is kind of hard and you may just do more damage. But I would almost kind of give the area of improvement to or disappointing award to the coaching staff, because Devontae Adams beat you once. You should have never run cover zero versus Devontae Adams. Like, never. You should never do that.
Right.
Most of the snaps you did see a safety shading him, so they were double covering him. But still, like, so it's Spagnuolo. You cannot cover Devontae Adams. There's a good amount of wide receivers in the NFL you do not cover zero. I mean, even if you're a freaking Patrick Surtain Jr. or J.C. Horn, who's, you know, Beeson, or I won't say Jalen Ramsey because Jalen Ramsey has been getting torn up lately, but Darius Slay from Philadelphia, you still don't play cover zero versus Devontae Adams. And so that, to me, was a little disappointing, because I think we even said it, right, in our group chat. They better not play cover zero versus Devontae. He better be double covered all game. And I guess the second time he was, and he still beat us. But the first time, that shouldn't have happened either. So that's my disappointment of the game.
And I will say that first play that he scored, the first time he had scored that touchdown, it was a great, great play call by the Raiders. Like, that was that was
and
great.
The throw was on point.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was right in front of me. And I saw, like, and it's crazy because I texted a buddy and I said, man, the way Devontae Adams lined up before that play, I was like, I'm running deep. And it was what, 4th-and-1 or 3rd-and-1? I can't remember. I think it was 4th-and-1, right?
It was 4th-and-1, yeah.
And yeah, and I saw, like, as soon as he took off, I was like, that's a fire. They're going 1v1. There's no safety deep. But, right, you know, that's sometimes what happens, right? Is you can't stop everything. You go to stop the higher percentage play, which is the run, right? And a 4th-and-1, something shorter. And you eventually just got to trust that your players will make plays. And, you know, in this time that Rashad Fenton didn't on that one, and he scored a really nice touchdown.
All right. So leading to our final topics, I guess you would say, for this episode. And both of them we did mention in our previous episode leading up to the Raiders game. And I'll start with the first one real quickly with the Carolina Panthers firing Matt Rhule as head coach literally Monday morning, right? Yeah, it was Monday morning.
Yeah.
Because we did our episode Sunday night. So we talked about how, you know, the top coaches we thought would be gone first, and he was number one on the list, and he was gone the next morning. So what are your thoughts on the firing of Matt Rhule?
It's like a whole season too late. But, you know, hey, he'll be all right. He's getting, what, $42 million over the next 5-6 years?
Right.
So he'll be perfectly fine. He'll be coaching on Alabama's staff next year under Nick Saban, and then he'll go get another big-time job at some college program because that's where he belongs. But I'm excited to see what they do now, right, because the one cool thing about most owners is when they go one direction, they go the complete opposite on their next hire. For example, Jacksonville, they went Meyer, and then they went on the complete end and got an NFL pro in Doug Peterson. So Carolina, I'm not going to say that, you know, they'll hire Sean Payton, or I don't know who's another coach, that another experienced coach that's out there. I don't know. I can't even think of one. Maybe like Brian Flores, if he decides to get back out. But at least they'll probably go with a pro guy that has some kind of proven NFL pedigree. You know, my pick is Ken Dorsey. I know he hasn't been a head coach, and he's only been an offensive coordinator for 1 year. But, that's an interesting situation to follow for me, and then I know for you, since that's your birth team.
Right. Well,
your birth location from team. That's what I mean.
I wouldn't say birth team. I'd say relocation team.
There you go.
I would say that. But it's an interesting thing. I didn't share with you yet, but so there was, so the owner, Temper came out the other day and had that press conference about it, and he got into it with one of the, Charlotte Observer guys that he does not like, seems like Scott Fowler. And, he asked him a question, like, at one point, did you kind of decide, like, this is, you know, where you're going to go with the team? And he took like a brief second, and I guess he has something against Scott. Like, I don't know what it is. He was basically, said, you know, I read your columns, the stuff that you say. All your answer is basically in the column that you've written in the past or something about that. So then once he admitted, like the owner admitted that he reads his columns, he goes out and he said, and he basically like writes the next day, and he said, he calls him out saying, that he needs to be a better owner, and that he had obviously fired three head coaches in the middle of the year, and he's counting the Charlotte FC soccer team because he fired him in the middle of the year. And, you know, basically he just needs to be doing – he needs to do better. He puts him on full blast, basically. And the funny thing is then somebody else puts a tweet out later and says, well, he can't fire him because he doesn't own the paper. And then someone says, well, he might try to buy the paper so he can fire the guy. I thought it was funny, but I was like, yeah, it's just pretty intense there right now what's going on. But I'm assuming they will, like you said, it'll interesting to see what, you know, kind of direction they go with next. Obviously, there's been rumors of Sean Payton. Obviously, they'll have to pay a lot of money from the Saints to get him as a head coach. And also, you mentioned about Ken Dorsey. You've mentioned this several times, offensive coordinator for Buffalo. And he used to be
Mr. Tablet Smasher.
Right, Mr. Tablet Smasher. You could also say almost AKA Tom Brady. He learned from him. I don't know. But, yeah, he's also a candidate too as well. I see more rumors out there. But who will they go with eventually? You know, who knows? But, yeah, definitely, like I said, we talked about it, him being number one. And, you know, what do you know? First thing, next day, it was him.
So. I should have put some money on that.
He could have won some money. So,
well, but he was the highest odds, right? So I guess it wouldn't have went too much.
At that point, yeah. So on to our next topic for our final thoughts topic as well is on the roughing the passer rule change, which basically had mentioned that a little bit in our last episode too about because the Brady thing had just happened that day, you know, where obviously that wasn't pretty much clearly a roughing the passer call. And then obviously we have the Chiefs game with Chris Jones and that happening too as well. So what is the NFL going to do about it? I know Andy said after the game, he said he's on a couple committees. You know what does that mean as far as like, you know, is he going to entice them to do something? I mean, obviously there's not going to be a change for this year. So anything, it's going to be a change for next year. But yeah, where does it start? I mean, where does it start with to get to have some kind of middle ground between this rule?
Yeah, so that's the hard part is someone at the end of the day is always going to be pissed off about it, right? Because if it's the team that it happens to, they're pissed. And if the team it doesn't happen to, they're, you know, they're pissed because they're allowing it. So I like to think of referees as I guess you can say cops and pilots, right? Where people say mistakes happen, but no, you can't have mistakes in your line of business, right? A cop can't make a mistake. You can mistakenly identify someone, I guess, and maybe you'll get sued. But you can't like shoot the wrong person and they can come back, right? You can't redo someone's life. Same thing with the pilot. You can't just accidentally crash a plane or mistakenly crash a plane. Yeah. The refs, they can make the wrong call, but there's technology in place to fix it. And the thing that I've talked about with football is soccer has, you know, VAR. And there's a lot more reviewable situations than in football because there's just that many more actions, right? Mm-hmm. But in football, there's 45 – well, most teams don't snap it with 0 seconds on the clock, on the play clock, every down, right? Only at the end of the game when they're trying to kill the clock. But there's at least 30 seconds between a play for you to review it, and you can make a decision within 30 seconds to say, hey, actually, that was wrong. It needs to be this. Now, problem is, in football, because it is a very physical game, you could make a holding call every single play. So going to the idea of, let's say, unroughing the passers, the problem is, it's roughing the passer now. It'll be pass interference again next year. You know, like they did a few years ago with the Rams and the was it the Saints? Right. And then that didn't work because then you challenge pass interferences and then it's interpreted. So that's the part that sucks, I think.
Here's the thing though. So what say for instance they decide next year saying any roughing the passer call can be challenged, just like it was with pass interference. Do you think that the overturn ratio will be better for that? I mean, I guess it depends, right? But I mean,
yeah, and that's the thing is, I don't like they were talking about that, right? I was listening to some show and they were talking about that the overturn pass interference was so low that's why they scrapped it.
Right.
Most of the times they get it right and they don't call roughing the passer. But when you do, how do you overturn it? Because the real problem is it's in the rule itself, right? Mm-hmm. Because let's say Tom Brady got thrown the exact same way that Patrick got thrown yesterday, and there was no roughing the passer.
No call. Right.
Kenny Pickett got killed twice. One was at his knees in the pocket, rolling out. And then the second one was him. I can't remember if he dove head first or feet first, but he got hit by a safety. You know, his lineman comes over to protect him.
Right.
They get in a big scuffle. So it's just inconsistent. And that's the problem is it's like with other things, right? It's if A is the problem, don't fix C and D until you fix A. And I think the problem is it's the interpretation of the rule, and there shouldn't be an interpretation. I mean, there are plenty of examples where you can say this is roughing the passer. You can clearly tell. I mean, you and I are obviously watching on TV, but that's what I mean about the whole assisted referee thing, right? If I forgot his name, Carl Cheffers, mm-hmm. is like, he laid on him. Well, he's laying on him because he's falling with the ball. So you can't cancel out a penalty in this case because they called it. Let's just start doing what soccer does and like let the play out, right? So if you think, right, in soccer, they'll be like, oh, I don't really know if he was offside, so I'm not going to pay attention. I'm not going to call offsides. I'm going to let it play out so I can go back and review it. Well, maybe they should do that for football and say, okay, I have that mark.
So when the play is done.
The passer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like in my head, I have it marked as roughing the passer, but I'm not going to call it. And then I'm going to confirm it as it's going through, right? Have the assistant referees or the guys reviewing the challenges and stuff like that. Have them say, hey, you know, he could say something like, okay, let's say during Chris Jones and Derek Carr's play. He could, you know, mic them and say, that's roughing the passer. And then, so now Scott, the video assistant referee, is like, okay, I'm going to look over it real quick. Boom, boom, boom. Yep, that's roughing the passer by definition, so call it. Or you could be like, boom, nope. You know, because a late flag or an early flag, it's the same thing as long as – well, I guess it's not the same thing, but if you get the right outcome, what does it matter if it's early or late, you know?
Right.
But the problem is that leads the – you know, most of the times they don't call roughing the passer when it's, I guess, appropriate. So this isn't an issue most of the times, right? But – and people won't stop watching, right? We've heard people say, I'm going to stop watching because it's soft and all this stuff.
No, people still watch.
Put buzzers on a quarterback. Yeah, you're still going to watch. It just sucks. And the referee shouldn't be that big a part of the game. Like, no one cares about the referee.
Yeah, like we were saying, like they're basically, they're managing the game. They're not playing the game themselves. It's just kind of like what you were saying, because someone brought a similar idea. Like, it would go to someone in New York. Like, play would be over, and then they would discuss it with somebody, you know, New York is an example, but, you know, wherever they have, like, the main officials at or whatever like that, they can look at it too. And I like that idea a lot better. It's kind of like when they review turnovers or touchdowns, right? Some of it's just up to the, refs or whatnot to look at it. But, yeah, I mean, that's – I don't know. At this point, that's the way it's got to be for certain things like that. Yeah, will it make the game longer at some point? I mean, I don't know. Probably not that much. But to get the calls right at the end of the day, even if a game's 15 minutes longer, I mean, that's worth it, I think, to me.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, I forgot again what TV analyst was talking about it. So Brady gets the calls all the time, right? Whether Brady fans, Patriots, and Bucks fans like it or not, he does. So he gets tossed. Right, he gets spun around by Grady Jarrett. And then Brady doesn't get called for kicking Grady Jarrett because he basically tries to, like, kick him off. And he's not doing anything bad, right? Grady Jarrett is literally just sacking the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But Brady takes exception to it, and he's, like, kicks out at him. And that's not the first time Brady's done that. Brady also slides with his, like, legs up, right? So if you crash into him, you could potentially hit you in the knees. Like, there's – bad intent with some of the things that he's doing, right? And like Patrick was tossed yesterday. Like I said, those two examples of Kenny Pickett. You know, you don't call the retaliation of it the same way that you do with if Chris Jones were to go and try to kick Davante Adams the way Tom Brady did,
mm-hmm.
You know, it'd probably be a foul. And again, this isn't more so much about Brady. It's so much about the consistency of the refs. So I think football is probably, you can say basketball, not really. It's just the fouls are very soft. But football, I think, is the most controversial referee in sport. And it doesn't, and it's crazy because it shouldn't be because of the delays in between plays. You have the opportunity to get it right every single time. Soccer, basketball, baseball, I guess, the strike zone rate. Maybe there are some controversies, but for the most part, they're strikes or they're not, right?
Yeah, baseball has the most down part between plays, obviously. Football is probably obviously next because, you know, soccer, basketball, hockey, it's always the clock's always going. It's always moving. Right. So, but yeah, it's that's the thing. It's like you said, they can get it right. It's just, you know, what kind of examples or things that they thoughts that they have to make it right is the thing. But, you know, it's until then, you know, I mean, will we see this more this year? I mean, probably.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely.
And it's going to cost a game, right? I mean, it almost cost this one. The other thing is, from a refereeing perspective, like, you're going to – they're always going to protect the quarterbacks, right? The NFL is always going to protect the quarterbacks. That's, you know, no one turns – no one tunes in the game when they advertise Aaron Donald versus Myles Garrett, or I don't know, they don't really play each other, but Myles Garrett versus TJ Watt. No one really is like, ooh, you know, the majority of us aren't like that. The football heads are like, ooh, that's going to be a great matchup, JJ Watt versus Myles Garrett, right? You could see two of the best pass rushers in the game.
Yeah.
Everyone cares about Derek Carr versus Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen. That is all you've heard about this past week, right? Or sorry, that's all you will hear about this week. Mahomes versus Allen. They don't talk about Diggs and Kelsey. I don't know if Tre'Davious White is playing or not. And George Karlaftis or Frank Clark and Greg Rousseau. You know, they don't talk about that.
No, because the people on the cover of the commercial or pictures you'll see is Allen and Mahomes. Yeah.
So that's the thing, is they're not going to change the rule to make it to where you can hit the quarterback better. So you got to fix whatever you're going to do.
Right. All right. Well, that actually will conclude today's edition of the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. Actually, we'll be back here, if not tomorrow, in the next few days with our week 6 matchup with the Buffalo Bills, which is actually that late Sunday afternoon game. I think it's like a 3:05 Central Time game. So it should be basically everyone should be able to watch the game because it should be a prime
except for
game.
Me.
Oh, so, yeah.
I know it sucks because we'll be done with our last game from a group perspective, but if we're going to the final, so if we're playing in the final will start at like 5:30.
Right.
So it's like we'd watch the game for about an hour and then have to turn right back around and play. And then that game would be over by the time this game's over. So I'm like, dang.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
So sorry. I'm tired of watching the Bills.
Right, I know. But, hey, this is the third time in a little bit over a year. Yeah.
Yeah, Josh Allen can have the regular season matchup. But because the head-to-head comes into play eventually for first play, well, for seeding, right?
Yes.
If they're – because I think it goes, well, obviously, your overall record, and then I think it's your head-to-head. So if the Chiefs and Bills are tied at the end of the year, you still won it, right? That's the more important part.
This will be the most important game.
And so, I think it would be the deciding factor between the two. I mean, they are the two best teams in the AFC.
And we'll talk about it more on our next episode. But obviously, this is the first time Mahomes has ever been an underdog at home. So a 2.5 underdog. So we'll talk more about that too as well. But yeah, you guys definitely don't want to miss our next episode talking about the Bills because that's going to be a good one for sure. So thanks again for listening, everyone. Don't forget to follow our podcast and go Chiefs.